fighting. And as a result, then it almost tells it in fairy tale form that they were heroes of old, men of renown. The Avengers have showed up on planet Earth, and they're mutants, and they're different, and they're phenomenal. But there's a problem because they're fallen angels, and their offspring now is not necessarily godly. Listen to what happens. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. Humanity had gone south, and it went south really bad. Makes me think of when we think of cavemen, how when we get further away from God, we become less human. When we get further away from God, we almost become animalistic. And the inclinations of their heart is only wicked, and there's violence, and there's all this junk going on in the world in those times. And people forget about God, and then they begin to make up their own stories and their own narrative and their own head. Verse 6 says, the Lord regretted that he'd made the human beings on the earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. This is just an anthropomorphic way of describing, from a human way of looking to go, God was grieved. God had this master plan. He's immutable. He's unchangeable. But he had a plan, so he didn't go, oh no, I made a mistake. And so we talked about that a lot last time. So the Lord said, I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race I have created, and with them the animals, the birds, and the creatures that move along the ground, for I regret that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. This is again the text letting us know, just in the narrative form, in the simplest ways, that God is letting us know that mankind went corrupt in very corrupt ways, and the inclination of their heart was only evil all the time. And so God goes, I'm going to reset this thing. I'm going to wipe mankind and animals, everything off of the face of the earth. And yet God shows in the midst of that, this is a story about God's wrath and his judgment and his sovereignty. But verse 8 reminds us, it's also about his grace. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Verse 9, now it tells us, so that tells us why the flood. God's going to annihilate humanity. He's going, I don't like how they're going, so I'm going to wipe them out. Because he can. Because he's God and he's just and he's sovereign. Verse 9 now tells us the narrative story of it. This is the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on the earth had corrupted their ways. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all the people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I am surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood. Make rooms in it and coat it with pitch inside and out. This is how you're to build it. The ark is to be 300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, and 30 cubits high. Make a roof for it, leaving below the roof an opening 1 cubit high all around. Put a door in the side of the ark and make lower, middle, and upper decks. I'm going to bring flood waters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens, every creature that has the breath of life in it. Everything on earth will perish. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. So Noah was a righteous man. He's blameless among the people of his time, verse 9 says, and he walked faithfully with God. This is a contrast comparison. Everyone else is wicked and evil, and they're corrupt all the time. The inclinations of their heart is just evil. And then contrast that to Noah. Noah, biblically, is just a word for rest. It's an interesting name for a guy, isn't it? But the Hebrew word for righteous is this idea that that he's confirmed as someone who is following the ways of the Lord. It's a standard. In other words, the Hebrew word really means measuring reed, because in those days they didn't have tape measures, they'd have reeds, they'd cut notches in it. And so it means that he was measuring up to the standards. We don't know. Noah didn't have a Bible. He didn't have scriptural text. So somehow in his heart, he had a way of communicating with the Lord, and he had a way of having his heart set on the things of the Lord. That's what it meant to be righteous. He understood somehow what God's will was to be, and he followed through with that. In the meantime, everyone else was kind of just doing their own thing and getting worse and worse, further away from what it meant to be a human. And then he told him to build an ark, and he gave him the specific dimensions. Oh, and by the way, the blameless is also another word. It's where they get the word from a spotless lamb without wrinkle, stain, or blemish. So it's an idea of also integrity, that in every aspect of his life, the text lets us know that Moses was righteous and he was this pure guy. An ark is, the word for ark really is it means to float. It's like it's also described as a box or a chest. In other words, this is just a floating object. It's non-navigable boat. When you think about that, how long Moses was on the boat, he couldn't steer it. He didn't have sails. You just got in and floated, and he floated for 5 months. Think about that, of being in a building, basically, that's floating with all these animals. And a cubit, when he says, make this cubit, a cubit is usually measured in the day from the tip of your longest finger to your elbow. That's what a cubit is. On average, we say today it's like 18 inches. And so basically this boat was 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet tall. That's a big boat. That's going to carry a lot of animals. Cubic feet, that's 1,400,000 cubic feet. That would be the equivalent of 522 boxcars filled with animals on a train. So that's a lot of space, and that's a lot of animals that he could hold. And each level was 15 feet tall. So that kind of gives us the dimensions of it a little bit. And so this is kind of the story of what he's telling. Verse 19. He says, "You are to bring into the ark two of all the living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, of every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. You are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and stored away as food for you and for them." Noah did everything just as God commanded him. I want you to notice that verse 22. Noah did everything just as God commanded him. No one else was building boats. Rain hadn't even been invented yet. We know that it took Moses somewhere around 120 years to build this boat. That's a lot of faith for a long time, isn't it? We're so impatient these days when we feel like God told us to do something and we don't see immediate results. We're out. We think, "God, where are you? Why have you forsaken me? Why have you abandoned me? You must not love me." But think about the patience and the endurance building a project for 120 years, trusting the Lord that he says something's going to happen with this floating thing. But the highlight, Noah did everything just as God commanded him. That means he made it out of gopher wood. He pitched it. He made it by the exact dimensions that the Lord told him. And he got the animals as the Lord told him. Chapter 7, verse 1 says, "Then the Lord said to Noah, 'Go into the ark, you and your whole family, because I have found you righteous in this generation. Take with you 7 pairs of every kind of clean animal, a male and its mate, and 1 pair of every kind of unclean animal, and a male and its mate. And also 7 pairs of every kind of bird, male and female, to keep the various kinds alive throughout the earth. 7 days from now I will send rain on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights, and I will wipe from the face of the earth every living creature I have made.'" Verse 5, "And Noah did all that the Lord commanded him." Now the text even gives us a little bit more detail. Have you ever thought about it? It's not just 2x2, is it? Some species, there's 7. And it's almost in idyllic Hebrew fashion. The number 7 and the number 40 are these ideas of completion. 40 just means a long period of time. But in Hebrew narrative literature, 40 is always the right number. Jesus was in the desert for 40 days. They marched around in the wilderness for 40 years. All these 40s are part of Hebrew literature that says this is the idyllic state, and it's always 7 days. You don't wait 5 days, you wait seven. Not that it wasn't true, it's just that in the idea. That's why it was so surprising when, remember, right, we talked last week when David picked up five stones? That's a writer's narrative device where, because seven's always complete, seven's always the perfect number. And so it builds a little tension when he goes, oh, he took five, not seven. What's going to happen? And it builds the tension in the story. And we don't know why he took five. That's why it's the tension. Isn't it cool? Would you just be still? Remind you of that humor. And Noah did all that the Lord commanded him. And again, now the specifics. Hey, go wait in the boat for 7 days. It's going to rain. Verse 6. Noah was 600 years old when the floodwaters came on the earth, and Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives entered the ark to escape the waters of the flood. Pairs of clean and unclean animals, of birds and all creatures that move along the ground, male and female, came to Noah and entered the ark as God had commanded Noah. And after the 7 days, the floodwaters came on the earth. Isn't it cool? The animals came to him. That's quite a cool scene. And even the animals obey the voice of the Lord because he's sovereign over everything. In the 600th year of Noah's life, on the 17th day of the second month, on the day all the springs of the great deep burst forth and the floodgates of heavens were opened and rain fell on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. On that very day, Noah and his sons Shem, Ham, and Japheth, together with his wife and the wives of his three sons, entered the ark. They had with them every wild animal according to its kind, all livestock according to their kinds, every creature that moves along the ground according to its kind, and every bird according to its kind, everything with wings. Pairs of all creatures that have the breath of life in them came to Noah and entered the ark. The animals going in were male and female of every living thing, as God had commanded Noah. Then the Lord shut him in. The 600th year, the 17th day of the second month. This is letting us know, I think, again, in the literary way of going, this is a real story. We've got it dated. It's got a stamp of the date and time of it. This is not just narrative, because narrative usually just kind of gives general overview of information. The details aren't specific unless it wants you to know. The text tells you what it wants you to know. And it's letting us know this is a really dated time and place in Noah's life, and this really happened. This isn't folklore. This isn't a myth. This isn't a mythological good God story. And note verse 11 and 12. Springs of the great deep burst forth, and the floodgates of the heavens were opened, and rain fell on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. So not only in this is a cataclysmic event. Not only did it rain, but all of a sudden the springs, like we have underwater caverns and things like that. Imagine them all bursting up. And so now you see how the earth begins to reshape and be reformed because, as you know, new mountain ranges were probably popping up that weren't there before. And new mountain ranges maybe were exploding that were there before, but it all gets covered. It all gets flooded and it's raining for 40 days and 40 nights. It feels like that around here lately, doesn't it? Imagine being Noah. And imagine all the wells coming up and springing forth. So there's all kinds of devastation and destruction going all around Noah. And then the picture is they're in the ark, safe and sound. Verse 17 says, for 40 days the flood kept coming on the earth. And as the waters increased, they lifted the ark high above the earth. The waters rose and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the surface of the water. They rose greatly on the earth, and all the high mountains under the entire heavens were covered. The waters rose and covered the mountains to a depth of more than 15 cubits. So it's a little over 23 feet to the highest point of the mountain. It's deeper than that. That's really, really deep. Every living thing that moved on land perished. Birds, livestock, wild animals, all the creatures that swarm over the earth, and all mankind. A dry erase board with critters and humans and creatures, and God takes it and goes, no more. Everything on dry land that had the breath of life in its nostrils died. Every living thing on the face of the earth was wiped out. People and animals and the creatures that move along the ground and the birds were wiped from the earth. Only Noah was left and those with him in the ark. The waters flooded the earth for 150 days. 40 days, 40 nights of rain, the ark floats, mountains are covered. It floods for 150 days. It's a sad moment on earth. No wonder Paul writes to the Romans in chapter 8 and he says, all creation groans and waits for the redemption of the sons and daughters of men. Because creation, not by its own will, was subjected to the curse. Why? Because of Adam and Eve. So creation has thorns and thistles. But once again, it reminds us that we are corrupt. It's not just Adam and Eve. Everyone else decided to be corrupt too. All have fallen short of the glory of God. And somehow Moses found the grace of the Lord. And so not only you and I are related to Grandpa and Grandma Adam and Eve, we're also related to Noah. And so we're all family. I don't care what race you are, what color you are, what origin you're from, what your DNA shows. We all go back to Grandpa Noah. And you're my brother and you're my sister. You're my relation. And the waters receded and it stopped raining. Chapter 8, verse 1. But God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and the livestock that were with him in the ark and sent a wind over the earth and the waters receded. Now the springs of the deep and the floodgates of the heavens had been closed and the rain had stopped falling from the sky. The water receded steadily from the earth and at the end of the 150 days, the water had gone down. And on the seventh day of the seventh month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. And the waters continued to recede until the 10th month. On the first day of the 10th month, the tops of the mountains became invisible. Once again, it gives us the chronological time and date that when Moses, from the moment that Moses it started to rain and the cataclysmic event of the flood happened, 5 months later, Moses is able to get out. Noah. I need to read this a little better. Next time you're a tree, you don't get any lines. But I needed that one, didn't I? You're like the prompter off the stage going, you got the wrong line. Thank you. So it stopped raining. Noah and his family are safe. Seventeenth day of the seventh month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. Some people say there's this local flood. That's one of the theories out there. I happen to believe in a universal flood because if it's local, Moses could have just been like Abraham, moved to dry land. But there's so many evidences, I mean, not to get into it because that's not the point of the narrative. This is not a scientific journal or anything like that. But a universal flood just makes more sense to me. That's why in the Himalayas you find fossils of whales and sea creatures and things like that. Or in North Dakota, you can find woolly mammoth fossils and things like that. That all of the world, everywhere has evidence that there's a universal flood. It's just makes sense to me. It's interesting too, even anthropologically, over 350 cultures, different cultures, have a flood story. There was one flood, one family, Noah. But over all these different anthropological studies show that 350 different cultures and counting have a flood story. So it again tells me this universal flood. It explains the fossils in the Himalayas and how Earth's geography has shifted and how we can find these fossils everywhere, all dispersed, not based on our continental structure as it is today. But that's a side note. So nevertheless, this is a true story, real flood, universally happened, that's what I believe. Verse 6, after 40 days, Noah, got it, opened a window he had made in the ark and sent out a raven and it kept flying back and forth until the water had dried up from the earth. Then he sent out a dove to see if the water had receded from the surface of the ground. But the dove could find nowhere to land or to perch because there was water over all the surface of the earth. So it returned to Noah in the ark. He reached out his hand and took the dove and brought it back to himself in the ark. He waited 7 more days and again sent out the dove from the ark. When the dove returned to him in the evening, there in its beak was a freshly plucked olive leaf. Then Noah knew that the water had receded from the earth. He waited 7 more days and sent the dove out again, but this time it did not return to him. Finally, after this long wait, now there's dry land that we can go out. By the first day of the first month of Noah's 601st year, the water had dried up from the earth. Noah then removed the covering from the ark and saw that the surface of the ground was dry. By the 27th day of the second month, the earth was completely dry. Finally. Then God said to Noah, "Come out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons and your wives. Bring out every kind of living creature that is with you, the birds, the animals, and all the creatures that move along the ground, so they can multiply on the earth and be fruitful and increase in number on it." So Noah came out, together with his sons and his wife and his sons' wives, all the animals and all the creatures that move along the ground, and all the birds. Everything that moves on land came out of the ark, one kind after another. God told Noah to come out, so what did he do? So Noah came out. Simple obedience. Verse 20. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and taking some of all the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings on it. The Lord smelled the pleasing aroma and said in his heart, "Never again will I curse the ground because of humans, even though every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood, and never again will I destroy all living creatures as I have done." As long as the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease. And that's the story of the flood. A couple things to remember. I love that Noah found favor with God. In a corrupt world, who do you seek to find favor with? Your boss, your employees, your buddies, the culture, society at large. Man, it's so dangerous for us today, isn't it? When you think about who are you trying to please, who are you trying to find favor with? Contrast to this is the contrast of Noah seeking God's favor versus the wickedness of others. A major theme of this whole story is God's judgment. But it's also a theme of God's grace for those who walk with Him. And He offers grace for those who do. Second, Noah was a good father. Since it's Father's Day, let's highlight the fact that Noah was a good dad. And being a good father starts with having a good relationship with your heavenly Father. That Noah's sons and their wives and his wife, they were saved because of his relationship with his Father. Guys, that's where it starts. You want to see your children grow up to be godly and righteous and find favor with the Lord? You lead. That's the idea of being a good father. His family was saved because of him. And dads, your family can be saved by your actions, by your words, by your lifestyle. How you live will shape and alter them. You're here today. Good job, dads. You brought your family here today. Good job. There's some dads that are not here today. They're not leading their family. Noah had faith. Boy, did he ever, 120 years. Listen to Hebrews 11, chapter 11, verse 7. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that is in keeping with faith. You know, the cool thing is Noah found favor with the Lord, the text says, but he didn't know there was a flood that was going to happen. In other words, Noah wasn't saved by his actions because of his fear. He already had faith in the Lord, and because he had faith in the Lord, he was walking with the Lord already. It wasn't out of fear, it was out of relationship. But then because God told him that, he's like, well, now he has some holy fear. It's like, I'm going to destroy this place. You can get on a boat and be safe. And so Noah obeyed that. When there's no evidence of rain, there is no sign of this cataclysmic doom coming, he believed the Lord. People still today interpret God's patience as not caring or is as inactive. People are so indifferent to the Lord, like, I don't see God. Where's this impending doom and wrath all these preachers are talking about? Look at 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 8 and 9. But do not forget this one thing, dear friends. With the Lord, a day is like a thousand years, and a thousand years are like a day. The Lord is not slow in keeping His promise, as some understand slowness. Instead, He is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to complete repentance. The reason that God doesn't just get down and express His wrath right now is why? Because He's gracious. He's incredibly patient. 120 years is pretty patient. The text, other scriptures let us know that Noah preached. He preached to the people for 120 years and no one saw evidence in their mind of where God was, and they just were indifferent to it. But Noah kept his faith. Verse 15 of that same text says, bear in mind that our Lord's patience means salvation. Don't think in your own life that God's inactivity or is not executing justice in the timetable that you want it. When you snap your fingers to the Him come running, that's not necessarily His inactivity or His indifference to your concern. It's God's ways are way bigger. He sees things way more clearly. We can't fathom all the things He has in mind. It's interesting because earlier the text says, you know, that's why He cuts the time short, because He's like, my days will not contend with man forever. I think about that to think, oh, wow, yeah, He doesn't put up with it. He's not going to put up with him forever. I think of how contentious I can be. The grace of the Lord to be patient, and the fact that He would even think about contending with me rather than just going. Think about that with your own life. Do you make God contend with you all the time? And then go and ask for forgiveness and then make Him contend with you some more and then go and ask for forgiveness and go on, come on, God. You're the vending machine grace, Lord. Sometimes God has to drag us towards righteousness. And the minute that He gets us dragged there, all of a sudden we go back. And He has to drag us towards righteousness again. And there's going to be a moment where He goes, that's it. I'm not contending with this anymore. But sometimes we're just contentious. Do we have to make God drag us as a church into righteous things and kingdom things? Last thing I'll share in a minute, but the flood is a narrative story. It's a story about this amazing event, one of the great Christian stories, isn't it, of all times. You have Moses and the Ten Commandments, the story of Adam and Eve, David and Goliath, but in the Hall of Fame, you know, the Mount Rushmore, Noah and the flood is right up there. It's like this great big dramatic play that unfolds, and the rains came down, the waters gush up, and the animals go on the ark, and Noah and his sons get in there, and they're saved, and they come out. Noah is the main character, isn't he? Not Moses. I got to get my lines right. Noah was the main character. Guess what? Noah had no lines in this play. Noah didn't speak a word. In the whole text, he never uttered a sentence. He's the lead character and got no lines. But Genesis 6:22 says this. Noah did everything just as God commanded him. Genesis 7:5. And Noah did all that the Lord commanded him. Genesis 8:18. God said, come out. So Noah came out. Genesis 8:20, Noah built an altar and sacrificed offerings on it. Noah walked with God. Noah listened to God. Noah obeyed God. Noah worshiped God. He had no lines. all actions. Noah's actions spoke louder than his words. Have you ever heard that phrase before? Actions speak louder than words. James reminds us that faith without works is dead. I want to remind you that I reminded my daughter years ago. Acting is action. Acting as a follower of God is about actions. Our words matter, dads. Your kids need to hear you say, good job. I love you. I'm proud of you. Well done. I'm sorry. I forgive you. They need to hear all those words. But they're watching. They're watching. And if Noah just believed in God and had no actions, he'd have drowned. Action. Acting in this play is about action. And in your life, your actions matter. Let's stand and pray. Father, your word tells us, slow to become angry and be slower to speak. You want men and women of action. We don't read about Noah's clever sayings or his great proverbs or his wise words, but his life spoke volumes. We read of a man who lived his whole life. No one believed him. Maybe his family, they followed him. And he saved humanity by his actions. I believe we can do the same. Lord, please make us a church, not just being doers of the word or hearers of the word, but make us doers also. Let's not look in a mirror and then quickly walk away and forget what our face looks like. Let's remember to live out our faith and be people of action. Put in us the spirit that you put in to Noah to simply obey you and walk with you and be a good, godly example to our family and the world around us. And I pray that you make us a church of action. May our lives speak volumes to those around us. I pray these things in Jesus' holy name. Amen.